With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The only daily Premier League podcast. This is Football Social Daily.
We've had pepperoni pizza gate, Fergie versus Wenger, tunnel bust-ups, an 8-2, a 6-1, and now a player accidentally standing on his own goalkeeper's foot, leaving an open net. It could only be Manchester United against Arsenal, and one of the Premier League's classic clashes didn't disappoint last night, as we saw the strangest of conceivable goals. A master marksman bagging his 800th career goal, penalty decisions, superstars in the stands, and all under the watchful eye of a new manager, whilst the current incumbent waves goodbye after 15 years at Old Trafford. United beat the Gunners 3-2 in an entertaining game last night, which happened to be Michael Carrick's last at Manchester United. He'll be leaving the club as Ralph Rangnick now takes the reins. We'll pick the bones out of that one, as well as Spurs picking up a much-needed win at home to Brentford. Son Heung-min, the standout, was last night's display a little more Conte from Tottenham after recent struggles. Plus, after a full rack of midweek madness in the Premier League, we pick out our heroes and villains from those nights under the lights, who deserves a badge of honour and who needs to hang their heads in shame. Welcome along to Football Social Daily, the only Premier League podcast with a new episode every day of the season. Thanks for listening to the show. If you hit subscribe now, that way you'll be up to date with every new podcast by receiving a notification as soon as it's ready. I'm Niall McCorn, and speaking of badges of honour, we've got a seasoned veteran on today's show, a man with many battle scars. Marley Anderson's here. Morning, mate.
Good morning. Yes, plenty of battle scars. Still nursing the odd injury from some lively debate in the past, I think.
And also a genuine, bona fide physical injury. I think you rolled your ankle last night at five-a-side, is that right?
I did, yeah. I don't know what I've done. It's just like a ligament thing, I think. But it was so innocuous. There was no one near me, and I just stepped on the floor, and then it just rolled. And I thought, Christ, I must be getting old. Like, I'm just rolling my ankle, just doing nothing.
I was going to say, you know, when footballers always go, well, I knew the time was right for me to hang them up. you're inching towards it, Marley.
Never. I overtook my goal tally for the whole of last year last night, which is probably the geekiest thing I do. But never mind. I am that guy who keeps track of how many goals he scores at 7-7.
Did you take the ball home with you?
I always do. Yeah, I just nick it.
He's got loads in his house. If Marley's the veteran, then our next guest is the rookie, albeit on Football Social Daily, as he's making his podcast debut today. Craig Hansen from Sporticos is joining us. Hello to you, Craig.
Hi, Niall. Thanks so much for having me. Pleasure to be on the show. Fortunately, I'm not carrying any physical battle scars from five-a-side. I'm far too lazy to play five-a-side. Haven't played in about 5 years. Very much the armchair pundit, but very much happy to be here. It's a pleasure.
It's good to have you with us, Craig. And your show, Sporticos, is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network, which is a catalogue of sporting shows you can find on our website or on all podcast platforms. Just head to sport-social.co.uk, click the podcast tab at the top of the page, and take a look at all the great shows we have there, including Sporticos, of course. So let's get to know you a little bit better, Craig. Tell us about your show, first and foremost.
Yeah, sure. So we do a weekly show where we like to speak to a fan of a different club every week. It could be a journalist or a social media manager, an ex-player, a fan group representative. The only important thing is that they have a real passion for one particular club. We like to do a deep dive into that club, talk about sort of their experiences going to games or maybe following from afar. You know, we have a lot of guests on from United States, India, other countries. Yeah, and we just do a deep dive into sort of fandom. We do talk about what's going on with that club in the here and now. But we also like to try and get into something a little bit different, get the fans to tell their own stories, sort of their connections to the clubs that they love and their stories, basically. Yeah, so we call it football. We call it Sportscast football stories for that reason.
Brilliant stuff. Do you have a team that you support, Craig? Is there any team that you are particularly passionate about?
Yes, there is. There's actually a few, but it's a bit of a complicated story. But from the Premier League side of things, I would say I'm a Man City fan. And then when it comes to anything outside of that, I closely follow my local team, Warsaw. We're in League Two, and I go to Warsaw home games every 2 weeks, try to go to away games when I can. And in terms of Man City, I pretty much only get to go to a couple of games a year, and it's more of a sort of TV experience. Keep a close eye on a few teams in Spain as well from some of the places that I used to live in the past.
I've been to the Bescot a number of times. Always enjoy a little trip up the M6 to go and take in a game at Walsall. Good to have you with us and your show, Sporticos, part of the Sport Social Podcast Network. As I say, a variety of sporting shows covered off there, whether you want Premier League fan casts, snooker, speedway, even wrestling. And of course, it's the Ashes coming up in a matter of days too, as the England cricket team look to win back that prestigious little urn from Australia. And you can hear all the best analysis from Down Under this winter with Simon Hughes, his brilliant podcast, The Analyst Inside Cricket, is now part of the Sports Social Podcast Network too. Back to the football now, though. That's what we're here for on Football Social Daily. And there were two top flight fixtures last night. Spurs beat Brentford 2-0 in North London. But first, we'll dive into the game at Old Trafford, where Manchester United beat Arsenal 3-2 in the Premier League. It was Arsenal who opened the scoring last night after just 12 minutes through one of the strangest goals I can remember. Emile Smith-Rowe scoring a nice volley, but there was no goalkeeper in the sticks. David De Gea was down on the ground as it flew in. It turns out that Fred, a teammate of David De Gea's, had accidentally stood on the goalkeeper's ankle at a corner, and when the ball came out to Smith Rowe, just volleyed it into an empty net. The referee, Martin Atkinson, gives the goal. As I said, Marley, that's the strangest goal I can remember for a long, long time. Was the decision to give the goal the right call for you?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I don't think... There's not even a...
It's my job to ask the question, though.
I know. But, I mean, I did see people moaning about it, and it's just tribalism, isn't it? Like, you only think that shouldn't have been a goal if you're a Man United fan. Like, there is nothing wrong. Your own player stood on your goalkeeper. Your goalkeeper went down like he'd been shot and got what he deserved. Like, your goalies are meant to be tough, man, but these days, they're so protected. That, you know, my lace is loose, everyone stop the game. And it's just, it was nice to see that goal go in from a neutral perspective because the referee was like, well, I didn't see it in the first place, but let's have VAR have a look at it just in case. And then obviously VAR pointed out that it was Fred who stood on his ankle, so it wasn't a foul. And even if it was a... an Arsenal player, it probably wouldn't have been a foul either. I wouldn't think that kind of thing happens 7 or 8 times a game to every player. You always get stood on. It's just part of the game. So why should it be different for a goalkeeper? And I think he got what he deserved by not manning up and taking it on a little bit more and just sucking it up for a few seconds and staying stood in your goal, because there's no way Smith Rowe would have scored had he just shook it off a little bit.
Do you know what? I want to talk about Fred in a little bit, but before we do, he reminds me of, you know, Mr. Smee from Peter Pan, that, you know, he's like the assistant to Captain Hook. He's always trying to be really helpful and really useful and doing everything for Captain Hook, but he just makes mistakes, like, albeit inadvertently. He doesn't mean to, but that was just kind of Fred in a nutshell last night, that I thought, you know, accidentally standing on De Gea's foot and causing him to go down. It was a good finish from Smith Rowe. And it was a really strange way for them to concede, Craig. It's one of those goals where you think that when things are going against you and you're down on your luck, it really exasperates you as a team. And you could almost see Manchester United's players deflate ever so slightly, thinking, my gosh, when are we going to get a slice of luck? So for them to come back and react and score just before halftime with Bruno Fernandes with a nice free-flowing move, that would have pleased particularly Ralf Rangnick watching from the stands.
Yeah, for sure. And a little bit of, redemption for Fred, because I thought he played a great part in that goal, the little flick assist for Fernandes. And I think you're right about Fred. You know, his attitude and his endeavour is so good. His energy, he really does give everything, but a lot of time he sort of gets in his own way. I think the system doesn't help him too much as well with the fact that he gets caught in possession a lot. I think a lot of time he finds it difficult when there's a really sort of high press on him, that there isn't really a plan for that. I think maybe when Rangnick gets in there, maybe Fred will make a few less mistakes. But yeah, it was good to see Fred sort of make up for that mistake there. And then later on, as we know, he also made up in another way. But yeah, I thought it was a great goal. Good response from United. I was hoping when the crazy goal happened that we could have a little bit of extra drama and maybe we could see something like that that time when Bielsa told Leeds to let Villa score. just because it was so crazy to watch. I was kind of hoping, really hope that something, you know, insane like that happens, that they say, oh, come on, we'll let you score or something because of the sportsmanship or whatever. I don't think that would have been a good idea on their part, but it would have been funny as a spectator.
Yeah, I definitely think that there was a few murmurings perhaps that could have been the case and that Arsenal would let Manchester United waltz through and score an equaliser, but it's just unlucky from Manchester United, or perhaps maybe slightly less resilience than would have been hoped for from David De Gea, as Marley points out. Now, we've mentioned Fred, so we may as well continue with him. He did give the ball away a lot, particularly in the first 25 minutes, Marley. But for me, and I think this is shown in the last few weeks, he seems to be the only Manchester United midfielder looking to pass the ball forwards and be aggressive with his passing and be progressive, trying to get the ball into the final third. He ended up being key in two of United's goals, as Craig's just highlighted, with winning possession and then, of course, winning the penalty, which allowed Manchester United to win 3-2. So as frustrating as he is, I think he's a lot more positive with his play in terms of passing the ball forward than someone like McTominay or even Matic to an extent is. I feel like with McTominay, he passes the ball sideways and backwards quite a lot, which isn't something that you'll see under the new manager, Ralf Rangnick. So Fred was showing, I think, even though it was frustrating and he was making mistakes last night from a Manchester United perspective, I think he was showing some potential that could really flourish under the new manager.
Yeah, I do think there's a player in there, mainly because you see him for Brazil and he's a completely different player. I feel like he almost plays better, similar to Pogba in a midfield three. As one of the sort of side midfielders, and he can go box to box and have a little bit of a freer role. Whereas in with Man United, I think the sort of 4-2-3-1 formation doesn't quite suit him very well, because you do have to be very, very good with the ball there. You don't have as much time, you know. You need to have a bit of a better understanding of the game than he does at times. But in the last couple of games, I think he was really good in Man United's last game as well. And then he's had that game. It's a bit all over the place, the game. You know, he made a few mistakes and gave the ball away a lot, but he also made an assist for Bruno Fernandes' goal, and he won the penalty, which is, I think, counts as an assist these days as well. So overall, Rangnick will probably be thinking, what can I get out of him? Is he part of what I've got? Because defensive midfield at Man United is very slim. There's not many players that can play there, and a lot of fans moan about the McFred situation with Fred and McTominay, but they're probably the best of what is available at Man United, because, you know, Demanja Matic is, 34 now and hasn't been able to run for about 5 years, so you're relying on him sort of positionally being spot on, but at some point he's always going to get physically outmatched in the game by somebody who's fast and can dribble around him. So it's a problem that needs to be solved, whether it's by coaching or signing someone else is sort of a matter of opinion, I suppose. But Rangnick is experienced. He will know how he wants Fred to play before he comes in, and hopefully can build on these couple of decent performances, because there is a bit of promise there.
The German actually gave his first press conference as new Manchester United manager this morning, said some interesting stuff, but effectively what it boiled down to was he just wants to win the next game, which is against Crystal Palace on Sunday. And that game will be previewed, as well as all the other top flight fixtures across Saturday and Sunday, on our preview show, The Dugout, which is out tonight. Former Premier League players Dean Hammond and Matt Jarvis will be alongside me to look ahead to those ones. Now, talking of midfielders at Manchester United, Michael Carrick was a pretty good player back in his day, and after last night's victory over Arsenal, it was announced immediately following the full-time whistle that he'll be leaving Manchester United after 15 years service as both a player and in more recent times a coach. What's your take on this one, Craig? Do you think it was the right time for him to leave the club? That's what he suggested in the post-match interview after the game, that he felt the time was right. Do you agree with that, and what do you think might be next for Michael Carrick?
Yeah, I think the timing was right for a number of reasons. I think he even alluded to this himself in the interview. I think that with the new manager coming in, there could be a slightly different style, you know, to the one that he's been experienced in coaching at his time with Ollie. And I think he was working as assistant maybe even before that as well, or at least in the staff. I think probably it is a good move on his part to just let it be a clean slate, just go brand new regime, because probably the style of football is going to change dramatically. But I think he's been an unbelievable servant for that club as a player, as one of the most underrated midfield players, I think, in the Premier League history. I think he was an unbelievable player. And he's done a great job there, I'm sure, in a coaching capacity and in his time as caretaker. I mean, can't complain too much about these three games he's had. I think he's shown a lot of promise. I think Bruno Fernandes said in his interview too that he could well go on to be a great coach. And I think that's the case. I'd like to see him take a little bit of time out and then come back and take on a job of his own, maybe a sort of bottom half of the Premier League or maybe top half of Championship, take on a team and try and sort of take on his own path, so to speak. But I think he'll be loved there forever, I think, complete club legend. But I think it was the right time to go and to sort of, I guess, clean house if Rangnick's coming in, because he's going to have a sort of overarching approach to everything, you know, not just the coaching, but when he goes on to be that consultant afterwards, it's sort of like he'll be overseeing everything. You want to start completely from fresh, I think. So I respect Carrick's decision, and I think he leaves with his head held high. And of course, there's the loyalty to Ollie as well, which is a factor. I'm sure that was weighing on his mind a lot when he made the decision.
Yeah, we saw a massive 20 Ollie legend banner unfurled at Old Trafford last night. We also saw him give an exit interview to MUTV, the club's TV station, when he left the club. We've also heard in Ralph Rangnick's press conference this morning that Solskjaer had a 2-hour long conversation with Ralph Rangnick about the squad, almost handing over the baton, so to speak, to the new man in charge. And now Michael Carrick's decided that his time is up. And actually, speaking post-match last night, Carrick said that he promised his wife when he retired from playing that they would spend some time together and go away and do some nice things. And he ended up just going straight into coaching. That was about 5 years ago. So I think he's finally fulfilling that promise. Manchester United's three goals, two of them were scored by Cristiano Ronaldo last night. One from open play, a nice sweeping finish into the corner. The second, which ended up being the winner, was a penalty. That takes him to 801 career goals. Another landmark for Cristiano Ronaldo. I was thinking about what I could ask about that, Marley, on the podcast, but nothing surprises me when it comes to Ronaldo anymore. I don't think he was amazing last night, but he pops up with two goals, and they're decisive goals that win Manchester United the game. I mean, 800 goals is a remarkable figure, but I'm kind of shrugging my shoulders as if to say, yeah, well, it's Cristiano Ronaldo. Of course we expect that.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to sort of... It's hard to put it into context, isn't it? Like, you know it's a lot of goals and everything, but then you realise, like, Jamie Carragher played 775 games in his career and Ronaldo's got 801 goals. So, like, he's not the only one as well. Like, you could throw so many players into that, like legendary players who had long careers, but Ronaldo scored more goals than they've even played games. It's just bizarre how many goals he scored. I always like them stats where it's like, if you had a 15-year career and you scored 30 goals a year for every year you were a professional, you would still be like 300 goals short of what Ronaldo's got, and it's the same with Messi as well. But it's just astronomical numbers, and he's got a lot more to give. I thought his performance was very sort of modern day Ronaldo. Like, he's more of a box guy now. He doesn't dribble as much, but when he needs to, he still can. And you know, he knows where to be in the box at times. You've seen that with his tapping. You know, made it look easy, but it's all about positioning and finding that gap behind the centre backs, but in front of the midfielders in the box. And then the penalty, I don't think he was ever going to miss it, but he was also never not going to put it down the middle. So I was a bit critical of Ramsdale diving as if he had two goals to cover, because he's got a track habit of sticking one down the middle, and at 2-2 with 10 minutes to go in a game, or 15 or whatever it was, he's likely going to smash it down the middle. But never mind, that's something for Ramsdale to worry about. But Ronaldo's just ridiculous, isn't it? And I'm just glad he's back in the Premier League, to be honest.
Yeah, Cristiano Ronaldo again showing what he's all about. Two goals, 800 and 801 respectively. As we say, it concluded the game, really. United winning 3-2 against Arsenal, the final score. And I'm conscious of this sounding like a Manchester United podcast in its entirety, just because I think they are the main story here. Arsenal beaten. Where do you think they let themselves down last night, Craig? Where do you think the game was lost, if that's a fair thing to say?
Yeah, I think you're right that the story is United. You know, with Fred and De Gea and Carrick leaving and Ronaldo scoring, you know, it's all United storylines. But I guess to turn to Arsenal, I don't know if I could say exactly like where the game was lost, because I think it was quite an evenly matched game. It was quite a frantic game. It wasn't like that United sort of dominated because of there was a sort of difference in shape and Arsenal just couldn't get into the game. It didn't feel like that or anything. It felt like, I guess, actually as well, considering where a lot of people thought Arsenal were going to be this year and after those first three games, I mean, a 2-2 for them, I think, would have been a good result. And narrowly losing 3-2, I guess the game was lost with Ødegaard's horrific tackle to give away the penalty. I think if he doesn't do that and they draw 2-2, I think that would be more or less an okay result. I guess from watching from where I was, I don't see a sort of huge systemic issue where I could say, you know, they were overrunning midfield, or I guess you could say they got a bit stretched. They got caught out a couple of times, like Ronaldo's first goal, for example. Maybe he shouldn't have been in so much space. They were maybe a little bit lackluster at the back in terms of getting back, but I don't know. I think in general, it was a decent performance from Arsenal, actually, I think, considering where they were after the first three games. I think they'll be disappointed that Ødegaard gave away the penalty, because I think they would have been happy to draw 2-2.
Manchester United 3, Arsenal 2. Final score at Old Trafford. Certainly a more entertaining game, in my opinion, in terms of all of the different things that happened, than Tottenham versus Brentford. But we will talk about that game in North London next, after this break, here on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Welcome back to the podcast. This is Football Social Daily from Sport Social, your daily Premier League show. If you hit subscribe, that way you won't miss another episode of the podcast again. Brand new shows every day of the top flight season, including Christmas as well. We've got all of those fixtures covered off. It is a busy fixture schedule, including 9 fixtures across Saturday and Sunday this weekend. All of those games will be previewed with former West Ham, Wolves and Norwich winger Matt Jarvis and ex-Leicester City, Brighton and Southampton midfielder Dean Hammond with me on The Dugout, which is out this evening, wherever you get your podcasts. Time to talk now about the other game that took place yesterday. Tottenham 2, Brentford 0 at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. An own goal from Sergi Canos after 12 minutes before Son Heung-min wrapped up the points for Spurs in the 65th. An important win for Tottenham, this one, Marley, and a chance for them to build some form with Norwich and Brighton their next two games, because after that they've got Leicester, Liverpool and West Ham in the Carabao Cup quarters, and that's all before Christmas.
It was important to get a win. Brentford are sort of all over the place at the minute. You don't know whether they're going to win, lose or draw. Been on that poor run. I think they lost 4 in a row, so coming to Spurs last night, I think Spurs needed to set out a sort of standard, because I think under Nuno that game had probably ended 0-0 or they'd have lost it. I think Brentford still had the lion's share of possession, but Conte's way is sort of, well, or was last night, sort of the rapid counter-attacks that really did the damage for them. I thought they scored one decent goal. The second goal, Son's goal, was really good. The first one was a bit scrappy and a bit lucky, with Janssen heading it off Sergi Canos's face, and it bouncing in the net. The poor sod, he's probably... I always think, like, when wingers score own goals and attacking players score own goals, it's just like, well, I shouldn't have been back here in the first place. I was just trying my best. And Pontus Janssen's headed it straight in the poor sod, and it just flew in the net. So, yeah, but Spurs, you know, Spurs just... I think they're in that period where they need to grind out results. It doesn't really matter if they're playing that well at the start of Conte's reign, because that will come. That will come with his philosophy. And once everyone gets used to what they're doing on a sort of a full 90 minutes and all the rest of it. But at the minute, just don't lose stupid little games like that, because, you know, just win any way you can. And I think they did that last night. And they'll be better for it in the coming weeks when they've got a little bit of a sort of easier run of fixtures.
I thought it was interesting, Marley, that you said just there about the counter-attacking, because that Son goal, it just felt like really fast forward play, which is something we've seen under Conte in the past. We know Spurs have capability to counter-attack 100% with the players they've got, but I think it was just the incisive nature of the second goal that they scored. And Son Heung-min, for me, was at the heart of everything last night. He was taking shots, testing the goalkeeper. He crossed the ball in for the own goal. He scored the counter-attack, as we've described it there. What did you make of his performance? Because he's proving every week, every season, just how important he is to Tottenham.
Son's one of the best wingers in the world. He's
one of my favourite players in the league to watch. I mean, yeah. He's just so direct. There's no frills with Son, is it? It's just kind of, he does his job, he knows his job, and he's very good at it.
Yeah, he's one of the most well-rounded players, I think, in the league. Like, he's got 2 feet, he can shoot, he can pass, he can play make, he can dribble. He's not that bad in the air, and he's a real threat. I mean, going back to sort of last season, if Spurs had lost Kane and Son was just there on his own, like that John Travolta meme where he's just looking around saying, where's everyone gone? I just thought, you know, if he is the only one there, that's such a hard task. But because they've kept Kane and because they've signed Son to a new deal, they can build the team around him and get the best out of him like they have been doing for the last 3 or 4 years. And he's responding in kind, isn't he? You know, that sort of counter-attack goal that he scored last night, it was just he wanted that ball more than Pontus Janssen, and he was just like, right, it's a foot race between me and you, and you're not gonna win it because you've got about 3 stone on me, so there's absolutely no chance that you're getting to that ball before me. Gets himself a little easy tap in and continues his decent run, but I think he'll be massive for Conte and massive for Spurs for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I was wondering whether last night was a little more Antonio Conte, the blueprint that we've come to expect and what we've seen in recent games. Obviously, that loss to Mura in the Europa Conference League, Craig, was a real bitter pill to swallow, not just for Conte, but for the supporters and the players as well. And it was interesting what he said after that game in particular, where he came out and mentioned how maybe the project is going to be slightly tougher than he anticipated. But would you agree that was a more Antonio Conte performance? It had the fingerprints of his style on it rather than what we've seen recently.
Yeah, 100%. I think you can see it in that second goal, in the goal, the counter-attack. Just the way that, I think, I can't remember who clears it for Spurs and it falls to Kane. He just finds Reguilón in acres of space, bombing along the left. And Son is just, I think he's one of the best players in the world. I really rate him. I'm a huge, huge fan of him. I think he will really flourish under Conte. And he's so quick at getting up the pitch, whether running with the ball or, as he did last night, running in for that tap-in. And I think you'll see a lot of that, of the fullbacks bursting, really quick to pounce. Like, they were so sort of lethargic in the last few weeks before Conte came in, when things got really bad under Nuno. You can't imagine them sort of pouncing on an opportunity like that, but you can already see a difference, I think, in energy, fitness, aggression. And I think you'll see that a lot, that if they win the ball sort of with many of the opponent's players committed in their half, like it was with Brentford, I think that most of Brentford's players were in Spurs' half, you'll see immediately one of the fullbacks bombing, Son, Kane, running through the middle. And I think you'll see that goal happen over and over again. It was much more like a Conte performance, and I think that's something for the Spurs fans to celebrate. I think as soon as he came in, I said that they'll definitely be challenging for the top four. And I think as it stands, I would have them as favourites to finish fourth, actually. I think it's up to United and Arsenal to overtake them just based on Conte's coaching alone.
Harry Kane still hasn't scored for a while. He's involved last night. He was playing a reasonable part in the attacking play that Spurs had a couple of moments where the goalkeeper saved his efforts. If they are going to finish in the top four, Craig, how imperative is it that Harry Kane starts finding the net again on a regular basis soon? Because we know that the Christmas period is full of fixtures where there's a game almost every couple of days, and they could do with Harry Kane getting back to his brilliant best if they're going to really make a tilt for the top four, as you say.
Yeah, I mean, he always starts slow, doesn't he? But I think Christmas is maybe a bit too slow. So he probably needs to get it going soon. I think as long as it might not be the worst thing in the world, as long as he's contributing in other ways, like as long as he's sort of dropping deep and playing those balls to Reguilón or whoever's coming out wide and sort of helping the play, that will be something. But yeah, of course, you'd want him to be getting some goals. I mean, Conte's teams do tend to have like a great striker who you can rely on, like he had with Lukaku at Inter, to score plenty of goals. And I think when he came there, he would have been banking on Kane probably being one of the most positive things about the project for him. So yeah, I mean, he needs to start finding the net soon. I don't know exactly when that's going to happen. I don't know exactly why he's having so much trouble this season. I mean, I guess it's the fact that the City thing got into his head, and maybe he's struggling with that psychologically. I don't know, but he really needs to pick up the pace and get some goals soon. But in the meantime, as long as he can be involved in the build-up in a good way, as long as people like Son and Lucas Moura and Reguilón are benefiting, then, you know, he still has his part to play, even without the goals, I think.
Yeah, Harry Kane is such a good weapon to have in your arsenal, even if he's not scoring goals. I don't think that drought will last for too long. I think a couple of seasons ago where Jamie Vardy hadn't scored for something like 6 months, Marley, and you know, you've watched Jamie Vardy from when he was at Halifax Town to now. So it's one of those where you know a player with certain quality, even if they're having a bit of a barren spell, isn't going to last for long.
Yeah, I mean, you would never say, you'd never say, oh, Kane's finished because he missed a one-on-one last night, or he's had a slow start. And you can understand why Kane's been a bit off with all the things that have gone on in the summer. Thought he was leaving, then he sort of turned around and said he wasn't. Then the new manager comes in and the team hasn't been great, and he's playing twice a week in the little Mickey Mouse European Cup or whatever it is. And you know what I mean? There's a lot going on, and you can understand that little sort of web of confusion is around him. So you can understand why he's not maybe at his best, but you can also understand that the guy scored well over 100 Premier League goals. And he's probably going to come good again at some point. So it's just a case of having him in your fantasy football team when he does, because you'll rake in the points.
Yeah, I can't imagine anyone that doesn't have Salah captained at this moment in time. I don't think Kane is in that many teams at the moment, but when he starts firing again, you just know he will be. Let's talk about Brentford then. First season in the Premier League. We were saying on The Dugout, which is out tonight, that it's almost a shock that Brentford are even in the Premier League, but yet they've started so brightly, they deserve plenty of credit. They're still 6 points from safety, so there's a reasonable cushion there, Marley, but they've got Leeds, Watford and Southampton in three of their next four matches. 5 points from those three games that I mentioned, that will go a long way to avoid being sucked into the mix, because it's not the time you want to hit a bad run of form with, as I say, a game every couple of days up till the start of the new year.
Yeah, definitely. It's a crunch time, isn't it? You know, it's nearly Christmas. You've given yourself a decent base, but at the same time, if you lose them three games, or if you take 1 point from them three games, you create a hell of a task for yourself. So it's sort of like the make or break point of Brentford's season, because they've been okay, but well, so they've been good to be fair, but there's still not a massive there's not a massive gap between the bottom three, and you end up you said there Watford, Southampton, those teams can overtake them pretty quickly. You know, if they win, you know, Watford aren't playing that badly right now, neither are Southampton. So if they win their game against Brentford, pull them into it a little bit more. Everyone's expecting Newcastle to get better. I'm not sure whether they will, when we will, like, but if there's a lot of scrapping and clambering over each other that is to be done in that bottom half of the table until now, until May. So I think there's a long way to go in that, and Brentford need to just be careful because they could easily get sucked into it if things don't go their way and their injuries don't clear up.
Yeah, I think Brentford, as I've said a couple of times in recent weeks on this show, are just starting to realise how brutal the Premier League can be, and the games up till Christmas should be exciting for everyone, but for last night, they were beaten in North London. Tottenham Hotspur 2, Brentford 0, the final score. Time for another quick break here on Football Social Daily, and afterwards we'll be doing our heroes and villains from this game week. We normally do this on a Monday after the weekend's games, but seeing as there's been games right throughout this midweek, we're going to treat you and do it again today. All of that coming up next after this here on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk. Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
Welcome back. This is Football Social Daily from Sport Social. My name's Niall. I've got Craig and Marley alongside me, and it is time to do our heroes and villains from the latest rack of Premier League games. We usually do this on a Monday after the weekend, but it seems as good a time as ever to do it today after what we've seen throughout the course of the last 3 or 4 days under the floodlights. Now, if you haven't listened to the show before, Heroes and Villains is where we do just exactly that. We pick 3 heroes, 1 each, and 3 villains, and we explain why. Can be as silly or as serious as you like, and I'll start first. I'll go with my hero, and this is quite serious, and I think that these people involved deserve immense credit for their work, and my hero award goes to the medical staff who aided both of those people who needed assistance in the medical emergencies at Watford and Southampton respectively, both of them on the same night at different grounds. The game between Watford and Chelsea at Vicarage Road was temporarily suspended whilst someone in the crowd needed to receive medical treatment. And at Southampton against Leicester, half-time at St Mary's, the start of the second half was delayed due to a medical emergency in the stands there on the south coast. So my hero award goes to everyone who was involved, whether that be fellow spectators, the medical staff involved, the doctors. Absolutely brilliant to see the game taking the right approach to this, because all too often we've seen people go down in the stands and the game just continue as if nothing's happening. So I think that football is going in the right direction when it comes to that. So those people involved would be my heroes for this midweek run of Premier League fixtures. Come on then, Marley, who's your hero over the last 3 or 4 days? We've seen some good games. We've had some good moments. Who are you choosing?
My hero is Joe Linton. Honest to God.
For the first time ever, maybe, picked Joe Linton as a hero.
Quite possibly, honestly. Mainly because Newcastle's game against Norwich on Tuesday night, which I honestly thought was last week. I feel like this week has been... There's that much football that I forgot we even played on Tuesday. But yeah, Joe Linton, he started as a sort of number 10 in like a 4-4-1-1 position. And obviously Kieran Clarke got sent off after 8 minutes, which was the most bizarre thing I've ever seen. So Eddie Howe had two choices, basically. Take a striker off and go 4-4-1, or do what he did and be brave and go 4-3-2. And that meant like taking Ryan Fraser off and putting Joe Linton in the centre midfield. So basically, we played like a classic midfield three and left Saint-Maximin up front with Callum Wilson. And he was brilliant. He was absolutely massive. He was everywhere in that game. He had like the perfect mix of like combative sort of tackling and easing the pressure on the team by sort of looking after the ball, winning free kicks, playing decent passes, dribbling us out of the box and getting us forward a little bit. And he was just everywhere, and I wasn't sure he had that to his game. I always knew he was technically a good player and better than a lot of the stick he's been given, and, you know, sometimes rightly so. But it's just a perfect example of what you can do when you're coached right. And Steve Bruce didn't have a clue what to do with him. He just sent a big 6'2" Brazilian and thought, he's a target man. And Eddie Howe came in and said, well, he's actually a very good technical player. He's not very physical, as in he won't fight with players, but if he's not like a Mitrovic or a Rondon as a target man sort of thing. But playing him in that centre midfield was superb. It was a masterstroke. And there was, I think, but there was one moment, wouldn't have made the highlight. It was like 78 minutes or something, and he just sort of dived in for this like sliding interception sort of thing, something that which isn't his game at all. And the camera cut to Eddie Howe and on the touchline, and you could see him mouthing the words, "Effing good job, Joe. Like keep going, Joe." And it was just like, that is coaching, and that is what you can get out of players when you have an idea of what they're good at, and you allow them to flourish, and you believe in them a little bit. And that's what Eddie Howe's doing to the team. And straight away, Joelinton's been good in his last three games, but against Norwich, he was absolutely superb. And I hope it continues, because there is a player in there. We just need to get it out of him.
How much do you think can be read into the fact that Joelinton no longer wears number 9 for Newcastle United? Is that such a trivial thing that it doesn't make any difference at all? Because, you know, that number 9 shirt holds a lot of prestige, namely through Alan Shearer. And when Joelinton came in for 40 million quid, he was given the number 9 and didn't really score any goals. He still doesn't score any goals. But now he's got the 7 shirt. Callum Wilson is a bona fide striker, plays in that 9 role and wears the 9 shirt now. I mean, we talk about small things and fine margins in the elite game, but is that one of them, do you think, or is that far too trivial a thing to attach to this particular scenario?
It maybe plays into it, but I think it's a little bit trivial because he was still playing like he'd never seen a football before when Steve Bruce was still sticking him up front and hoping he could do the best. And then towards the end of Bruce's spell, he actually played left midfield and he was way, way better. And it was like, oh, maybe he's not a striker, and the penny finally dropped for Steve Bruce. But it's probably just a fan thing. I don't blame Joelinton for taking it when he was given it when he came, because it's just something you wouldn't really turn it down. And I also think that a Brazilian 22, 23-year-old doesn't really understand what the number 9 shirt in Newcastle United means. When he's kicking a ball around on the beach in Brazil as a 10-year-old or whatever, he's not seeing Shearer bang him in every week for Newcastle. He doesn't quite understand it. So to him, it was probably just a shirt number. He did say he understood it, but everyone does. But I think it's more of a fan thing. And I think if you're wearing the number 9, you do get a little bit less time if you're not a genuine striker scoring 15, 20 goals a season. So it's the right thing that Wilson's wearing it, because he's our goal scorer. And it's the number 7 shirt suits Joelinton a little bit more, even though he's probably not quite a winger, but it still suits him better than 9 did.
I think you're right. I think it's such a strange little quirk of football that players love certain shirts and they only want to wear certain shirts, and the weight that comes with a specific number is something we spoke to Trevor Stephen about on the dugout a few months back towards the start of the season, when Cristiano Ronaldo came into Manchester United and was handed the number 7 shirt, which was previously worn by Edinson Cavani. And we were talking about what that means for the brand of CR7, what that means for Ronaldo in terms of his confidence and his prestige as a Manchester United player. So interesting conversations to be had around that, I think, albeit quite trivial in this case, as you rightly point out, Marley. That's Marley's hero. Let's move on to you, Craig. Who are you choosing to wear a badge of honour after this week's Premier League fixtures?
Well, it might be a little bit tribal because I follow Man City, but my hero for midweek and for the whole season so far is Bernardo Silva, who I thought in the Villa game was absolutely outstanding again. I think he's been just incredible all season. It feels like with City every year there's sort of one player who emerges. I think last year it was Gundogan. Obviously there's so many great players there, but there's one who emerges as a class above. And it's so funny that Silva was apparently on the way out at the summer, or at least thinking about it. And somehow they've managed to keep him. Thank God they did, because he's just unbelievable. And in particular, in terms of a moment, I thought that the ridiculous side foot volley that he scored from the assist from Jesus. I mean, the timing of the run, the timing, the way he even sort of addressed his run and his body shape, like while the ball was in flight as it was coming over, so he could get there at the exact second, time it perfectly, the quality, the technique. I thought it was just an unbelievable goal from both players, him and Jesus, for the assist too. But I think Bernardo is just a class above, a joy to watch. And right now, I'd say, along with Salah and a couple of other players, he's up there as sort of in the top five best players in the league at the moment.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, Craig. Great choice. Great goal he scored as well. Whilst you're there, Craig, why don't we do your villain as well? If Bernardo's the hero, who's the villain of the piece?
Marley actually stole my... well, he didn't steal my villain, but he referenced my villain. So my villain's actually going to be Kieran Clarke.
Thank you.
because I felt that by pulling Teemu Pukki down like that, I understand that it's sort of just an emotional reaction. You know, I get it. Like, I've played, you know, even when you play five-a-side and stuff, sometimes you do things without thinking, just in the moment, an instinct. But I think that was a really big mistake, because to go down to 10 men with 9 minutes gone in a really crucial relegation six-pointer that they would have been targeting a win, I feel that also, not to take anything away from Pukki, because I think it was even that game that he scored that sublime volley. I'm not going to say I don't rate him at all, but I mean, it wouldn't have been impossible to believe that he could have missed a one-on-one against Dubravka. I think Dubravka could have come out, made himself big, and he might have put it wide, or Dubravka might have got a hand on it. And even if he does slide it in, okay, it's 1-0 early doors, but you've still got 11 men. I just feel that by pulling Pukki back, I thought it was unnecessary, really. It wasn't like, 90th minute of the game, I'll get sent off, one for the team, and we win the game. It's like, there wasn't really need for that. And he wasn't exactly pulling back, you know, a guy who's going to go in on goal and guaranteed score. I mean, Pukki misses chances. He doesn't get that many, because I know that it's not like he's playing for the team that gives him the most service in Norwich, but he does miss chances. And despite his fantastic goal later in the game, I still think if I was Clarke, I would have gambled on chasing him back, trying to put pressure on him, trying to sort of get in his head. But, you know, just if he scores, he scores, take it. But I reckon there's a chance he could have missed that. And I thought it was a really big mistake and quite unnecessary on his part.
I know what you mean. If they go through and score, you've got 80 minutes to make the game up. But if you get sent off, you've got 80 minutes of grafting with 10 men. So it's a great point you raise. Well, who's your villain, Marley? If not Kieran Clarke, is it someone else, or are you with Craig here?
It was going to be Clarke until before, and I thought, I can't...
Sorry, mate.
No.
What's your thoughts on Clarke? No. You can have him as well. I'd understand that.
I just think he's ball bag. He's our worst defender. He shouldn't have been playing in the first place, and he's ended up doing that. So that's that one. But I didn't want to turn this into Marley's just going to talk about Newcastle again. So I have got something which is slightly more trivial, but still winds me up so much. And it happened in the Man United game last night, and it happens in every bloody Man United game as well. And it's people who feel the need to pitch invade to try and get a selfie or something, or touch Cristiano Ronaldo. Happens in every game he plays, happens with Messi as well. And there was one who did it last night as well, and he just ran over to Ronaldo because he knew he was getting substituted it was an Arsenal corner, and I think he walked over to defend a corner, and someone ran on, and
it was a kid, right?
I don't give a shit who it is.
I was going to say, are you expecting stewards to like drop kick children?
If I was a steward, I would run in. Have you ever seen remember Kane off the 90s, the wrestler?
Yeah,
just a big boot.
Yeah,
get off the pitch, lad. Oh yeah, yeah, finish him off with a tombstone pile driver and just slide exactly. Him off the pitch, slide his little corpse off the pitch. I don't care. But
I agree.
Anybody, honest to God, man, anybody who does it just winds me up. Like, what's the point? Like, why do you think that you can do that? Like you just don't do it. And if you're a parent of a kid, you'd be like, no, don't do that. Don't be a because we'll get banned. And you'll never be able to see him again and all the rest of it. So But even, like, I know it's like a trivial thing, but even to bring this back to a slightly more serious point, nobody gets caught quick enough before they get to the players. So the stewards, like, if you've been to a football match, you know stewards are half asleep for most of the game. They don't really care. You can easily get past one and get on the pitch if you want, but it could lead to a really serious situation one day. Like, if somebody manages to slip in something that they can hurt a player with, whether it be some sort of weapon, a penknife or keys or whatever, like, it could lead to something quite serious. And I know it's kind of trivial with Ronaldo, like, they all want a selfie or to touch him or something, but it could lead to a serious situation in future, because once you get past the steward, no one tries to stop you. And the stewards are usually fat old men who just sort of can't run in the slidey shoes because they're wearing flipping brogues and they're trying to run on a freshly watered pitch and they've got no chance. So, you know what I mean? They go on and it turns into Keystone Cops where everyone just falls over and there's people sliding everywhere like frigging, what do you call them, ice dancers?
Figure skating.
Yeah, like someone's doing the bolero on the pitch or something. It's madness.
Very good. I'm going to twist the knife even further, and this one is also about the fans, my villain. In fact, it's not directly about the fans. It's TV reporters asking managers and players about the fans. Now, hear me out here. I'll explain, because I'm a big advocate of fans having their voices heard more in football. I've banged on about that multiple times in the three or so seasons we've been doing this podcast. The fans are the lifeblood of the Premier League. They're the lifeblood of football, particularly in this country where we have such a deep and diverse pyramid which goes all the way down to the grassroots level and still attracts several hundreds of fans, which is different to any other country in Europe, in my opinion. We miss the fans hugely during the pandemic. We miss them massively when the stands are empty and covered in tarpaulin. It was soulless. It wasn't the same. It was very, very strange. But the fans have been back now for 4 months. Stop asking questions about the fans. Oh, the fans were good, weren't they? They're good every week. Just stop asking those stupid questions. And there was one reporter, I don't know who it was, and I don't like to dig people out, but there was one reporter for Amazon Prime for the Southampton versus Leicester game. And I was watching the interview with Ralph Hasenhüttl pre-match. And the reporter said, how much are you looking forward to what is always a great atmosphere here at St. Mary's? I thought, you haven't done your research, have you? St. Mary's has never had a good atmosphere ever in history. The only time it had a good atmosphere is when Portsmouth came to town. So,
oh, here we go.
One of those where I just thought, stop asking questions about the fans. There's so many more interesting questions you could ask. For instance, do you remember when you got beat 9-0? Do you think that will happen again tonight? He didn't ask that question. Instead, he asked about the fans. So that would be my villain. Something very, very trivial. But as we say, that's what happens on Heroes and Villains. We can be as silly or as serious as you like. And that rounds us off for today's Football Social Daily. Thanks very much, Marley. Appreciate your time as ever. We'll go and let you frustrate yourself over Kieran Clarke's poor decision in the Norwich game, which feels like a week ago, but you got another big game this weekend against Burnley.
Yep.
When you're on the podcast on Monday, what sort of mood do you think you'll be in after this weekend's clash with the Clarets?
Good. I think we'll beat them. But the best thing about Kieran Clarke is getting sent off is that I don't have to see him play football for the next 3 weeks.
And also, thanks very much to Craig from the Sporticos podcast, part of the Sports Social Podcast Network, which you can go and check out there and on all platforms, of course. Appreciate your time too, Craig. Now, I should probably ask you how you're going to be feeling on Monday, seeing as you're off onto a stag do in about 45 minutes' time.
Yeah, it's going to be a big one. We're driving up to the Yorkshire Dales for my friend's stag weekend. We're going to have like 20 of us there. It's going to be pretty crazy. And Monday's going to be hard. I think I actually have to record a podcast on Monday as well. So that should be great. It should be good fun.
Look forward to listening to that. Of course, Sporticos, part of the Sports Social Podcast Network, as we say. As is Football Social Daily, this podcast, the only daily Premier League show. Appreciate your company as ever. If you hit subscribe, that way you won't miss another episode. We'll be back with the dugout tonight, 7:30 UK time. Make sure you hit subscribe, that way you won't miss it. Myself, alongside former West Ham and Wolves winger Matt Jarvis and former Leicester and Southampton midfielder Dean Hammond, talking all about this weekend's Premier League fixtures. But that's it from us today, and we'll catch you again on the next one.
Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.